Thanks for being here this evening. My name is Kevin Conover, and we're broadcasting down here in Southern California. You're listening to Educate for Life Radio, and we're on KPRZ 1210 AM, as well as FM 106.1 in North County. And we've got all kinds of fantastic guests on the show that you can share. We're on podcasts, so you can check us out on iTunes and all the other different podcast platforms for all kinds of amazing information. And I've got a really exciting show this evening with a wonderful guest that I actually know personally. And let me tell you a little bit about him before we hop in here. You're going to love this program. His name is Dr. Don Welch, and he founded what is called the Welch Family Therapy Institute. He is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He has over 30 years of experience in the fields of mental health and relationship skills. He founded the Center for Enriching Relationships in 2002. They have a bunch of different sites down here locally in Southern California. He has 30 therapists and 50 university students in training, which is phenomenal. He oversees a partnership between CER and Point Loma Nazarene University to train and provide clinical hours to students in the Master of Arts in Clinical Counseling program. He's a published author, university professor, and speaker at conferences, churches, retreats, and seminars. He has 3 master's degrees and a doctorate degree. Dr. Welch, thanks a lot for being on the program this evening.
Oh, Kevin, it's my pleasure. It's so good to see you and your family, and so glad everything's going so well for you. And we sure appreciate you. And thank you for having me on your show.
Absolutely. You know, for those of you who don't know, my wife and I attended Pastor and Dr. Welch, his class for 2 years over at Skyline Community Church. And I'll tell you, it was a huge blessing to us. And I feel so privileged to have been able to sit in that class every Sunday for 2 years. And there were takeaways there that had a dramatic influence on my own marriage and helping me to be a better husband and just in so many ways. So Pastor Don, thank you very much for what you've been doing and continue to do.
Oh, what an honor. And thank you. Thank you so much for participating. And yeah, I look forward to our discussion today as well. So thank you, Kevin, very much. Yeah, I was going to say, my son.
So what we're talking,
your tutelage, as you know, you were his teacher and you were his favorite. One of his, well, I better be careful there because you were truly a professor. He so enjoyed you. So thank you. He learned so much about the Lord. And so thank you, sir.
Oh, Daniel is fantastic. We had a blast. His year was a lot of fun. And you know, what's that verse that says, cast your bread upon the waters and it will return to you, right? So yes. It's like we each have an opportunity to serve one another and that blessing comes full circle. So thank the Lord. Yes. But we're going to be talking about Dr. Don's, Don Welch's book. You just came out with this book, The Responsive Marriage, Finding the Path Out of Reactivity. And start with the question. I mean, this is an unusual title for a marriage book. It's not something that you would immediately think of, oh, this is the title, unless you have the experience to know what the big issues are. And the subtitle says, Finding the Path Out of Reactivity. Break that down for our listeners. Why did you choose this title?
Yes, for a long time, I have seen as a clinician, a pastor, also a professor, I have seen, I believe, one of the more significant destructive parts of marriage having to do with how people conduct involuntary reactions. So if I may just give you an example of that, like say I sigh or I roll my eyes, Kevin, or I might giggle. We have hundreds of these that happen without our awareness. It's unconscious. And oftentimes that then creates a reactivity, a reaction by the other person until now they're in a fight. We thought of this one time. I started asking people, both of you in the class, you may remember my asking, hey, have you guys ever been in a misunderstanding or a fight? And I'll ask the class that or a conference. And oftentimes everyone raises their hand, yes. And then I ask the second question, in the middle of that misunderstanding or this fight, I guess you could call it misunderstanding, did you ever stop and say, what are we fighting about? I have no idea what we're fighting about. How did we get here? And truly the answer to that, I believe scientifically, is that we have a reaction to that. So I define reactivity, which is where we've defined the book as the response of marriage, but a reactive marriage is that reactivity is involuntary, uncontrolled relationship impeding behaviors that originate from the feeling part of our brain, known as the limbic system. And because they originate from the feeling part of the brain rather than the thinking part, they are largely outside of our conscious awareness. And this is what makes reactivity so insidious. So we're often not even aware, say we are rolling our eyes or sighing in exasperation, turning away from our spouse, or acting in other ways that tend to create distance. And Jesus talks about non-distance. He says, I'll never leave you, never forsake you. I'm coming to you. And so a healthy relationship is able to stay present with each other when it becomes a bit reactive. And that can be difficult because if our limbic system goes too high, in other words, our sympathetic nervous system, we have a hard time controlling because involuntary reactions tend to come to us. The example, if I can just give, in all of the textbooks, Kevin, I've taught Psych 101 many, many times, sometimes twice a year for years. And in all textbooks, they will design a little structure that has somebody has their hand or their finger over a candle, and then it shows the neurological reactivity that happens when you when your hand touches something hot. There is a reflex without the brain knowing that it's hot. Instantly, and most people will go, no, I knew it was hot. When I touched it, it was hot. Well, that's true, except that scientifically and biologically, neurologically, when we touch something, what happens that's hot, we have a reflex, and it's God's way to protect us from burning our hand, hopefully. And that happens, that reflex can happen from early childhood trauma or experiences that now are acting out in the marriage itself.
Yeah, this is so important, I feel like, for people's marriages. And you've written this whole book with this as the focus of the title. So obviously, in your mind, over 30 years of experience, this is, would you say, the key issue to a long-term healthy marriage?
Yes, I really do believe that most marriages have this reactivity in it. And I can remember early on in our marriage, Robin, whom you know well, my precious wife, that we had quite a bit of reactivity initially in our marriage. And by the way, we've also developed an assessment tool that measures the involuntary reaction. It's in the very back of the book where you can connect with it. And it's 204 questions, so it's a scientific-driven tool that measures your involuntary reaction. So awareness provides the opportunity to choose. And the focus of the book is choice and voice equals trust. So the more awareness we have, the more we are able to say manage the involuntary reactions that have already happened. That's a little bit of
Okay,
background, yes.
so you emphasized here awareness. So how do you develop that awareness? And real quickly, for those of you listening, my guest is Dr. Don Welch, and there is a marriage conference covering what we're talking about today. So if you're like, wow, I need this, this is something that would really benefit my marriage, not only can you get the book, but on May 17th and 18th is the Responsive Marriage Conference located here in Southern California. Dr. Welch, I'll let you speak to that, but you can also find more information about this on WelchTherapyInstitute.com. Welch is WELCH, TherapyInstitute.com. Tell us a little bit, where is this Responsive Marriage Conference going to be held, Dr. Welch?
Right in East County, not far from you, and that's going to be at the El Cajon Wesleyan Church, and it's you can find that easily. We have it on our website that you already said, WelchTherapyInstitute.com, and that will give you all the information you need to know about it. We hope to have a Lambs player, actress, actor there. Excuse me. We're going to have comedy. We're going to have a demonstration by a couple demonstrating how reactivity can be moved to more responsivity. We have a saxophonist, the saxophone who will be doing music. It's going to be, we have lunch provided on Saturday. So it's Friday night from it's 6:30, I think, to 9, and then Saturday till about 3 o'clock. And we hope that this will be life-changing because you'll be able to take the assessment. We have a handbook that comes with it, and then almost 40 pages of defining your reactivity to help you. And say if you're dating someone seriously or are dating, or you're engaged or you're married, and it doesn't matter if you've been married one day or 60 years, because we all have reactivity. And the book talks about how to decrease that reactivity. If I can give you one example, when I was a pastor, I had a couple come in, and we were talking about their expectations for the marriage. And they'd been married 40 years, and they never really talked about their expectations. So they had a lot of reactivity.
Oh man,
And so I said,
that's
well,
funny.
how do you, what are some of the things you do in the home, and what would you prefer not to do? And she said, his wife said, well, I love taking out the trash, but for 40 years, my husband wouldn't let me. He takes out the trash. And he stood up in the session, put his hands up in the air, and said, what do you mean? 40 years ago, you should have told me that you love taking out the trash. I hate taking out the trash. Well, they hadn't talked about things that cause reactivity. And we're going to talk about that at the conference on May 17 and May 18 at the El Cajon Wesleyan Church. But it's also in the book. We talk about that. So those are the kinds of things that can cause reactivity. But with your previous question, Kevin, yes, I firmly believe that reactivity, that you cannot see, you cannot, almost you can't stop it. Like, for example, in 1991, there was the discovery of mirror neurons. We've all heard of that because I think 2 or 3 years later, the famous book, Daniel Goleman's book on emotional intelligence, hit the New York Times bestseller, and there are hundreds of books now written. And his fifth command in that book is that if you want to know how to manage other people, manage your own emotion first. And that's EQ. You know, when I was growing up, I never heard of EQ. I don't know that I had much of it either, but emotional intelligence, we knew of IQ, and I was lacking some of that as well, but EQ. So this idea in this book is trying to suggest that we clearly have a major epidemic of divorce, not just because of involuntary reaction, but because we're not managing it well. And we have too much anxiety. There's too much anxiety in our society now. And the way I discovered that, Kevin, I started asking my students years ago, and you may do this with your students, tell me, when was the first time you guys you thought you had a text, you know, a phantom text? I said a phantom. That was a mistake as a professor. A phantom text, and someone raised, Prof, what do you mean a phantom? You mean Phantom of the Opera? And I said, no, a phantom text where you think there's a text, you feel it, and yet it's not there. All hands, it seemed, went up. And that was showing a lot of anxiety. If you're always anticipating, because in the DSM-5, that's the small Bible with the small B for all psychological disorders and challenges, and that the anxiety is anticipatory. And so these ideas, if we anticipate our mate to be reactive toward us, then we're going to already be reactive. And I think it is really the demise of marriages. There's other features, the other factors. But a lot of this comes from childhood wounds and childhood challenges that have happened to all of us in different ways.
I have a question about this because, you know, what you hear, what has been popularly said, is that the two biggest causes of divorce are sex and money, right?
Yes.
And you're saying actually that what is causing all the problems is reactivity. How are those related to one another?
It's
Is that
such a
true
great.
about money and sex, or is that
It
not
is.
true?
That is true, Kevin. And so, yeah, it's so easy to talk with you, Kevin. So I love this conversation. That you are exactly right. The research would show money and communication. And yet, if we cannot communicate, we can't talk about money. So oftentimes, communication rises to the first level of concern. And what happens in communication, we can't help but react. Let me give you an example, if I can, from with the other person. Is if I were to kind of squint my eyes like I'm really trying to listen to you, a mirror neuron, which I was just talking about, that was discovered in Italy back in 1991, it's not very long ago, you might, without knowing, you might squint your eyes. If you know, our kids were much younger, is that, you know, when a baby cries, oftentimes there's an empathic reaction from another baby. So what happens is we have a reaction already to someone. So if our communication is not very good, it's not healthy, it's not where it should be, we will begin to react to our mate, and especially about money. You know, Jesus talked more about money than prayer. More times in the Bible, we all know that. When you count it, he talked about not how much money you have, but how you hold it too close, maybe to the heart. And the idea that money always raises involuntary reactions, because the greatest fear could be that I'm not going to be successful. That is the greatest fear of a male. And for a female, it's more of I'm going to be abandoned or not be cared for. Because we think of females, Jesus spent so much time caring for them, and they actually have much more depression than do males. So I got off on a little
And
tangent, but yes.
no, there's so much good stuff here to unpack. And so that, you were talking about the anxiety and the depression, and anxiety and depression are somewhat related to one to another. And that what
Yes.
the what and when we come to these big issues like sex and money in marriage, there's so much surrounding them that can create anxiety for the couples. That it short circuits their ability to communicate, and all they are is reacting one to another. They've stopped communicating. And so this is really interesting to me. So how do you begin to navigate, a person may be listening to this and they may be thinking, well, I'm not really reactive, I don't think. I mean, am I
Right,
reactive? This might
right.
be going through their mind because it's not something we really think that much about, because like you said, it's almost just a part of the way we live, and we lose sight of the fact that it's even happening. So how does a person begin to identify this in their own life and start to, kind of critically examine the way they are reacting? How do they figure that out?
Yeah, let's start with an example, if we may, Kevin. Say you grew up playing soccer. And you really loved it. Maybe there's someone who didn't love it, but you love soccer and you remember smelling the green grass, the cut, freshly cut green grass. And wherever you're, maybe you're walking or running or with your family or and with a friend, and all of a sudden you run by a nicely fresh cut grass lawn. And all of a sudden, without knowing, you have these fond feelings that come over you as if you're there at the soccer field. Now, let's say you were forced to play soccer and you absolutely hated it. And so you associate green cut grass with how much you hate soccer. Well, say you're walking in your neighborhood and you walk by a fresh cut lawn. And without knowing, it's an involuntary reaction that you might have the same guttural feelings that you did when you were younger. So, how to work on this is to begin to understand where the reactivity is coming from. This is a little bit of somatic experience where we actually, that's a whole movement in the scientific world, and that's to be aware of where it's coming from. Let me give another example of this. I'm a trauma treatment specialist, and what happens when we do EMDR, it emulates third REM sleep, like rapid eye movement. And our eyes are moving, all of ours. And if we get to third REM sleep without knowing, and we believe scientifically that that movement is trying to go back to a trauma or something that's bothersome, it could be recent, and sometimes it could be way earlier in life. And it's trying to reconstruct that so that new synapse will connect. As you know, we have synapse that connects all of our. It's like electrical current. It's faster than what, 148,000 miles per second, electricity, but not quite as fast as Google, but it's so fast it happens before you know it. And so we have these ongoing reactions in our life that we are unaware of. And especially we can read our mate's face because 65 to 80% of all communication is nonverbal. If my wife looks at me in a certain way, if it's in a negative way, I almost get a tingle up and down my back, my sympathetic nervous system. Now, fortunately, that doesn't happen as often.
Trauma sounds like something that's a trauma response.
Yeah, that's a trauma response. So
No,
these are just examples. I
I,
promise.
you know, it's
I promise
funny.
I'm a good husband.
No, you're a fantastic husband. It's funny you say this because when my wife and I were first dating, I didn't know it, but I used to make facial expressions. And she said to me, "Why are you making that face?" And I said, "What face?" And I was completely unaware, but apparently it was a very like intimidating face. And I didn't even know it, but when she made me aware of it, I was like, "Oh man, I gotta stop that. Who else am I doing this to? Who is like, what does he not like me?" Or, you know, and so that's really interesting that you point that out. Yeah.
Well, you know my kids, Daniel and Savannah, our kids, Robinson, and what happened is they would look at me and say, "Dad, stop looking at us like that." And I said, "What am I looking like?" And finally, they just one day took a picture of me and showed it. And I said, "You got to be kidding me! Look at me!" I said, "I make a living by listening to people. I'm usually, grimacing and following along." And it spoke volumes what I didn't want to speak, and that was involuntary reactions that I was having. So we have to start to become aware of the reactivity. One way to do that is a simple tool that we have in our handbook, and I do spend quite a bit of time in the book. And you may say, "Well, I already do this." And it is where you actually begin to be aware of your core feeling and your core experience. So let me give an example of this. So say your wife says something to you, and at that point, you already have a retort, because we practice this a lot, don't we? Well, you would, because you're a skilled moderator, teacher, and
Well, I'm constantly reviewing in my mind the discussions and thinking, wait a second, you know, right? So we all do this to one degree or another, right? So
So the key to it is that you help the person name their core feelings. So let me give an experience. Let me say that Robin, I say something to my wife, Robin. She's much more sensitive and intuitive and empathetic than I am. But I say she's a very strong person. But I say something to her, and she's able to use both feeling and thought together. This is what she might say. She might say, "Oh, when I experience you talking with that tone, I feel afraid, scared, and hurt." Now, what we typically do is we'd want to say, "I didn't do that to you. I'm not even saying that to you." That's just, we call it flight to intellectualization. It's one of the top 10, top 13, but top of the list of defense mechanisms. And that's flight to intellectualization. So we have to stop ourselves and validate her first and say, "Oh my. So when I said this to you, you experienced my voice and tone, and that's your experience, right? That's your experience. Your feelings are, you feel cornered, afraid, and scared or frustrated, whatever the feeling might be. That's the starting place. That's validation." So in the book, I talk about what is intimacy. And intimacy, we use the acrostic of KEY, KEY, is kindness. That's for the K. The E, so KEY. K is for kindness, E is for empathy, and Y is for yielding. And that's all encompasses this idea of validating the other person's experience. And so we oftentimes say too often, "Oh, I really feel like this," or, "I feel that," or, "I feel this." And here's an example of it. This is a misnomer. This is not true. When I say this, "Well, I just feel like you don't love me." Well, that's not really a feeling. The way to really get the feeling is to say, when I experience you not listening to me, I feel unloved, afraid, scared." Does that make sense? So we need to separate those two. And that's a great start to be able to not let or permit one's involuntary reactions to run amok, to rain on us.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if other people feel this way, but sometimes when I hear this stuff, I'm like, so good, so good, so good, so good. But I can't do all this. This is crazy. Like because everything is so second nature. Do you know what I'm saying? That we have so many patterns that we've developed over our lifespan that sometimes you look at it and you just go, oh, this is all like exactly what I need to be, but how in the world am I going to do this. What would you say to the husband or the wife or the couple that says, we love what you're saying, Dr. Welch, but we feel kind of hopeless and that this is beyond our ability to change. What do you say to somebody like that?
That's such a powerful question. I think we'd be asked of all of us, in the sense of the perhaps response is that Jesus really wants us to have intimacy. In fact, to have intimacy where we're not, it's not like second nature. And when you use the word second nature, Kevin, may I suggest that second nature is like someone who throws a ball at a pitcher and they get muscle memory. So when they throw it, they're not analyzing it as they throw it. It's second nature, right? That's involuntary reactions. And we all do that in different ways. And say if my parent would raise their voice at me, that actually my parents didn't. I probably should have, but I got spanked enough as a kid. So, but I was going to say that, and I deserved it every time, believe you me. And it was a plan.
Me too. Me
My dad would
too.
say, this is going to hurt me more than you. And I never understood that till I got a little older. But the idea was that we have these involuntary reactions. And so one way to work on it is to just consistently, on a 5 to 10 minute a day, practice behaviors that allow you not to be reactive. So if my parent yelled at me, let's say that happened, like I was suggesting, if I got yelled at, and then my wife, which she's never yelled at me, but my wife, Robin, if she yelled at me, I might have an involuntary reaction to her, like I did to my parents. And so what we want to do is separate those two so that I'm staying present with my wife. Not that she should yell at me, or she does, but yelling does happen
Well,
in.
no, that's what I was going to ask you. As you said, you should practice this 5 to 10 minutes a day. Should I tell my wife to yell at me and I'll practice staying calm? How do I practice
I
that?
know. Yeah, she's such a sweet person. I can't even imagine her ever yelling at you. I can't even imagine that. But I was going to say that what you can practice is practice something positive. So think about being at a restaurant. That's what I do with my patients in my clinic, is that I'll ask them, think about being at your favorite restaurant. And then think of looking at each other and say, well, what I experience being here with you at the restaurant, I feel happy, elated, and peaceful. And then the other person validates that by just saying it back to the other person. Does that make sense? That's showing kindness, that's showing empathy. But if we don't validate, we almost can, without intentionality, wipe out empathy. And empathy is so important. Have you ever seen an older couple? Like, my wife's a little bit younger than I am, but I'm kind of old. But you go to a restaurant, you see the person, and he's sweetly pulling out her chair, and she sits down, and then the patting, and you're okay, honey, are you doing well? And there's this sweet tenderness of empathy. Likely that couple practiced including and increasing their empathy, because the lack of empathy will always cause a marriage to default to a business relationship. Did you get the dry cleaning? Did you get the kids to their events? And then it becomes very pragmatic. And that's a danger, danger place, Mr. Rogers. Danger, danger, danger to actually be in that position. Yeah.
Very interesting. It's funny because I was thinking about I just turned 48 and I was thinking about I want to have a really joyful marriage. My parents just celebrated their 70th anniversary, which is incredible.
That's
And they're very close to one another. And I was thinking, okay, so what is the picture of what I would like to, my marriage relationship to be like with my wife, so that we can really enjoy one another's company and really have a closeness. And you've mentioned intimacy several times here. When you use the word intimacy, you are referencing the word, does that mean closeness? Is that what we're talking about? Is intimacy the in your mind, is that the ideal goal, is pursuing intimacy?
well, it is the biblical goal. When Jesus talked about, Father, I pray that we'll be one, and that I pray they'll be one as we are one, talking about the Trinity. So when you think about it, intimacy is having a full voice and full choice. I talk a lot about this in the book, and we will be talking a lot about this at the conference on May 17 and May 18. That, yes, intimacy, when we think about that, I think of the great kenosis passage in the Bible, where Jesus said, I do not, even though he's fully God, fully man, right, Kevin? You're our biblical scholar here, but yeah, fully man, fully God. And he said, I do not, this is God saying this, Jesus saying this, I do not consider myself equal with God, but I make myself less than and pour out my life. You know, that's, I believe that's, it's the great kenosis passage, which kenosis meaning to know. And so this idea that God wants us to fully know him. And that's the example. He wants us in marriage to be fully known and to fully know the other person. And one way to do that is to make sure that you allow the other person to have full voice, full choice. I use this nerdy illustration with my students. So I'm calling Robin, right? I'm calling her, and my students, isn't it true? You're not nerdy, but I'm kind of nerdy, and it worked better for me as a professor. I was kind of nerdy, kind of tripping over things, and people kind of laugh at me, you know. Yeah, not.
I pretend to be nerdy. I pretend to be nerdy, but they all think I'm really cool, especially with my hat. They
Well,
love my hat.
you have to pretend to be nerdy. I'm already nerdy. You know that. Just ask my kids. Ask my kids.
I just tell myself that. I come home and I tell my son. My son goes, "Dad, why do you wear that hat?" And I said, "Because it's cool. Everybody thinks it's cool." He goes, "Dad, nobody thinks that's cool." So I just tell myself it's cool.
It's so true, isn't it? We get humbled with our kids, don't we? They keep us humble. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm calling my wife, and so I ask her, I say, "Hun, do you have a moment to talk? Do you have a moment to talk?" And she says, "I really now no, notice the voice and choice in this." Okay. She says, "I don't really have a moment to talk. How about in 2 hours?" And I said, "Oh no, I'm going into a session with a client. How about in 3? Would that week?" "Well, I'm going out with my friend for lunch, but I'll be back at 2." And while I'm saying this, one of my students go, "Hey, prof, just tell her what you want. Tell her what you need." I said, okay, but hold on for a moment. The idea is choice and voice in this." And so the concept is, she might say, "Well, yes, I can do it at that time. I can do it at that time." The more high level of voice and choice in a marriage, the more trust, the more empathy, the more yielding, and the more kindness, because we are considering the other person's voice. And what happens in marriage when a couple gets first married, they do what all of the business books I've ever read, I've not read all of them, but a lot of them will say the only thing we have as a leader is influence, right? We can be autocratic, force people to do things. No, that's your job description, you're going to do that. Well, they'll leave. Pretty soon you don't have a company. But the idea is all we have is influence. And so what we normally do in a marriage is we try to influence the other person. So we're opposite, we are attracted to the opposite temperament. So before marriage, we can tend to attract to the opposite. After marriage, we can tend to attack. And that attack is trying to influence and make the other person like us. And also in that assessment that I talked about, Kevin, earlier, that you'll be able to take at the conference, that I believe.
Yeah, well, no, I've got it right here.
Oh yeah, you got the book.
I'm gonna take it right after we get off the air.
Okay, all right. Okay. It's in the back of the book, and you can connect with it.
That's
But
right.
it also measures your normal temperament, and so it has two things. It measures your normal temperament, and then it shows 9 graphs of how you can your temperament can go awry, and so that we become more aware. So we want that voice and choice. That's another response to your earlier question about how can we change this reactivity. It's becoming more voice choice in the relationship and practicing that on a regular basis.
So, I've got two questions that popped into my head. Do you ever have a situation in your counseling experience where you have a couple, right? And one of them listens to what you're saying and they just latch on and they're like, "Oh, yes, this is it." And the other one's kind of, "Oh, ho hum, ho hum." And do you ever have a situation where there seems to be an imbalance And what happens there in that regard, as far as like, is this kind of a it takes two to tango kind of thing, or can a person pursue this and it will go in a good direction regardless of whether both of them are enthusiastic about it or not?
Yes. Well, in a therapy office, that almost always takes place. Here's why. Because you have opposite temperament, op two full people that were first attracted to each other. Usually I'll ask a couple that's in trouble, I'll say, "Hey, tell me what you guys do for fun together." You know, what's and their constant statement that I hear is, "I don't think we have anything in common. That's why we're here. You're supposed to help us." But usually opposites attract, and then they can attack after marriage, and then they can end up in a pastor's office and a therapy office. By the way, I really believe that where healing takes place is in the local church. We as therapists come alongside pastors, and that's why this whole group of materials that we've created, it's to help local churches have an entire marriage ministry program. That's what we hope. But that is very common, Kevin, with couples. And so what you have to do is to balance it, to stay right in the middle of the couple and allow one to be more resistant and the other one wanting what's maybe being said, because usually you don't have both of them saying, "Hey, we're 100% in." Now that does happen. I've had that. But oftentimes, if the couple is in deep trouble, one will say, "Yeah, fix him." You know, you've ever seen Far Side, you know, with the two bears standing and one had a, you know, has the bullseye on and he's pointing the finger at the other one. It's like, there's, you know, you
That
can shoot.
happens in church. That happens in church all the time when the pastor says something in the, So,
Nudging, yes,
yeah, exactly.
yes.
This
So,
is for you.
yeah. In fact, I've had that happen with teenagers for a long time. They'll call up and say, "Hey, doc, can you fix our son or our daughter?" And oftentimes I want to say, "Please come in with him or her and let's try to work on this as a family and work on things." Because I believe in that. But it is truly a common thing, but you try to help balance with them. I'm not trying to teach a therapy class here, but you try to balance yourself with them and allow each to have a voice. Like one will say, "I don't think this will ever work." And the other one's saying, "I'm committed. Why aren't you?" You know, to the marriage.
So my question for that, for our listeners, because I think this is the situation for a lot of people, is do you see it as a hopeful situation if one embraces it and the other one is not as enthusiastic? If the person that's the one person will the other person come along over time as that person changes the reactivity? Is that a hopeful situation, or is it kind of like, no, if both people aren't on board, then it's not really going to progress in a positive direction.
Great question. I believe therapeutically, you only need one person that's on board. If the other person is tricking everyone and bringing the other one to drop them off into therapy and is going to divorce them, that's a hopeless situation. But if one is there saying, "I get it, let's do this," and the other's going, "I don't believe in this," I've had that happen many times. If I can somehow create an environment where there's no judgment on either, and that there is a safe environment. Oftentimes, if one can see the other mate less reactive, that can give hope. Because oftentimes, reactivity creates a lack of hope, because reactivity means there's no voice, no choice. Back to that concept that I was just sharing with my wife, you know, calling her and we practice. By the way, just a little note, if you practice that voice and choice, this started happened to Robin and me years ago, and I'm so thankful this happened. We decided, you know, early on in a marriage, you should decide the domestic responsibilities. And we decided the last one out of bed in the morning. By the way, for all couples that might be listening, please, if it's at all possible, my wife and I practice this in our entire marriage, is go to bed at the same time and get up at the same time. That's a difficult ask,
It
but it
is.
pays great dividends. John Gottman, in his literature out of the University of Washington, has said those partings and those inviting back, you know, coming back together, they're very important. But here's what happened to us, and I still remember this, and I think Robin did this. If you're the last one out of bed, you make the bed. And so one morning, I usually get up and run in the mornings with our dog before it's even light, and so I'm usually out of bed. But I wasn't that morning. She got up, and she said, "Oh, honey, don't worry about it. I'll get the bed. I'll make the bed. And I said, well, honey, we have a, you know, we have to, we have our agreement that the last one out of bed would make the, I'd be happy to make the bed. She said, no, please. I just want to do that for you. And we started having fun with that after a while. And we started to try to increase. She does it better than I do it because you can see she's the one that led in this, that we're where we have decided something and say, no, I'll go do that for you. Now, my culinary skills are the worst on the planet. So for me to try to step in and help, that would be, my kids would already say that. They always go, what's wrong with dad? He doesn't know how to cook very well. Yeah, I'm so sorry. But it, and my wife, Robin, she says it works for us. But anyways, that's nice. She's so
Corn dogs.
nice.
That's great. For those of you listening, my guest is Dr. Don Welch, and coming up is the Responsive Marriage Conference, May 17th and 18th. I highly recommend you go to this. You can find more information on WelchTherapyInstitute.com. This is right here in East County, San Diego. And so it'll be a fantastic opportunity. Regardless of whether you can make that or not, I recommend his book, The Responsive Marriage. If you've been listening to this program, I think it's obvious that it is a huge blessing to many people. I'm thinking about making my son go to this conference just to get a head start here. He's only 17, but I'm like, boy, this might avoid a lot of heartache down the road, you know?
Yes, I just always welcome those who are, you know, dating or they're engaged or married, and those who are starting out their marriage, to start out something correct is so important. Like you're playing a sport, you want to learn correctly where your feet should be, where your arms should be. And here, this is talking about how to become aware of your reactivity and including that key idea, kindness for the K, E for empathy, and ye, Y for yielding. That yielding is so important. That means that if I'm already reactive, I yield to the other person. No, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to say that. In fact, that happened to me 3 nights ago. I said something to my wife. It was a quick reactivity. And then I almost instantaneously said, oh, honey, I'm really sorry. I didn't, that's really not what I mean, but I did react to you and I'm sorry. And she said, she quick to respond to me. The healthiest of marriages, I'm not trying to say that our marriage is perfect because no one's perfect. We're all human.
Sure.
And but the idea is a perfect marriage, if you want to say it that way, healthy marriage is they recover quickly. Like I'm always amazed. I love basketball and NBA, you watch, or now we're in March Madness, but you watch these athletes and they turn an ankle. When I turned an ankle as a kid, I was out for 3 months. They turn an ankle and then they're back in the game. I guess unless they tore a ligament, but they're back in the game because they are working well. They're highly toned, honed instruments. So highly honed marriage is one that recovers quickly.
Yeah, that's another thing I think that is something that we could all learn to do better is after having conflict, some people, you know, they'll go days without talking to one another or they'll hold grudges or whatever versus okay, we're moving beyond this. I'm not gonna take this personally. Is that just something that is another something that you focus on and you're kind of like, okay, I've got to make a point of learning to recover quickly. Is that how that happens?
Yes, it's not always possible because of our limbic system. Think about it if you in this way, if you don't mind, and those for listening, Evan, is that say you're on I-5 and or I-8, you know, going out east, and you know, almost to have an accident, you pull over to the side, my hands are nervous at that point, I'm breathing heavily, my limbic system is engaged. It's kind of the fight, flight, freeze. And actually we talk about that in the book is a lot. Is that, and I talk about the limbic system. That's kind of boring. That would cause someone not to want to buy the book. But I do talk about the limbic system and that what happens to us is sometimes we have to be able to calm down if it gets that wild. That's why sometimes, you know, the Bible says that a couple should not part only to pray and fast. So really, the Bible instructs us if we, at all possible, if we can stay present. So we have a lot of tips and skills that we try to suggest, like good deep diaphragmatic breathing. Progressive muscle relaxation, different ways to imagery, to actually calm oneself and to suggest that they can continue to be calmed. But that's important to stay present with the other person if at all possible.
A couple other things I wanted to just touch on real quick. There's so much to talk about, but you one of the quotes from your book is unmet expectations are relationship killers. What is an example of an unmet expectation? What are you referring there to when you say that? What is a person, what should a person keep their eyes open for?
Yes. So what I mean by that is an unmet expectation would be, say I come home and I'm not sure if my wife's going to be angry, happy, or frustrated. There's a famous book that talks about this idea of living in a home where it's radical, it's irrational. The idea is that I'm not sure what I'm coming home to, or I'm not sure. And the person in this particular book talks about it. The book is called It Will Never Happen to Me. Claudia Black wrote it, PhD, LCSW. But in the book, she said there's three things that happens to a person when they don't have their expectations met. So she said when we would come home and then our dad would arrive home and he was an alcoholic, she said we would do three things, depending upon how he reacted. So if he closed his door gently to the vehicle, we would come out and greet him. If he got out and slammed the door, we would hide under the beds. If he slammed the door and began screaming, we'd run out the back door for our lives. So they had no, they didn't know they, well, it looks like there's three expectations, but more expectations we have. By the way, my wife doesn't do that. I'm very fortunate to be married to a woman that is really, when I say this, she, you saw her up front in the class, and she, I would oftentimes say that she is what you see up front here in the sense of how she responds and reacts. She sounds like an angel, and she's close to it, but I hope that she could hear that. But
That's
what
wonderful.
happens is if we don't lay out expectations, remember, expectation would be for the couple early on in their marriage, even before marriage, to actually decide what the domestic responsibilities and other things. Like, for example, if we spend over $100, that if we're looking to spend over $100, we'll consult the other person, whatever the money might be. It could be $50 or whatever. But it's the couple knows they can already expect what's happening. In fact, that's the best parenting, is when the children know what to expect. So it's a killer when we're always in point, we're always reactive. We see parentification happen to little children, that they have to react like an adult, but they do not have the capacity to do that. And that is trauma. And they'll carry that likely into their adulthood and into a marriage if they're not treated.
It sounds like, to a degree, you're connecting unmet expectations with, the inability to predict what is going to happen. Is
Yes,
there a relationship there?
there is. That's a really good point, Kevin, because predictable parenting is the best parenting. When you think about parenting, there is where it's autocratic. It's going to be my way or the highway. And there's the second one where we have a lot of reciprocity. The third one is where it's permissive. That's we allow them to do what they want to do. And then the fourth one is dismissive. But the second one creates a balance of discussion. You do this a lot in your classroom with your students. And that's it. So predictable parenting is the best parenting because they know that they're going to likely have some level of voice. That comes from Dr. Foster Kline, the medical doctor who developed love and logic. And in that, he talks about how we ought to allow children to make decisions early on. And I still remember my daughter early on, we were getting ready for church in Kansas where we lived, and we would dress up. I had a suit, she had her little dress, and my wife Robin, and we were working. She's the oldest, and so we were trying to encourage her to make choices early on. So I said, "Do you want to wear your blue dress, honey, or do you want your yellow dress?" She looked at me at about 6 years of age and she says, "Daddy, which one do you want? Which one do you like?" Which is very true of healthy adults at that age. And I said, "Well, I'll tell you in a minute. If you don't mind, can you make the choice? Can you?" And she looked out the window and saw the blue sky and she said, "Oh, I like blue dress. And so she wore the blue dress, but she had a lot of voice and choice. We tried to do that well. I tend to be kind of autocratic. My kids said, "You always have an opinion on something, Dad." And so, well, I did what I was talking about. It's called authoritative. That's the second best. It's the number one best parent. Not authoritarian, but authoritative. That's the second one. And then there's permissive and dismissive. So predictability is helpful. I always like to I
And you
tell the
see, oh,
excuse me.
sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, please. Oh,
No, no.
I'm gonna say I
Would you
tell.
rather I go or you go?
I know. I was kind of overriding. I mean, this is your show,
Did
Kevin.
you
So let me start.
see how I initiated choice right there? I
Thank you.
initiated
I
choice.
feel much better.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. And then I can offer it back to you. So we go back and forth. And
Okay, go ahead, you go.
well, I was going to say I have this little story in the book, and we tried to. You talked about predictability. So we did a research project, and what it was is we had our students. They were taking an exam, and then we had an impossible exam for them to take, and then I had the true exam. So the other professors in the classroom, and we did this both ways, but he was in the classroom, and this exam, it was a theology exam, and there was no way they could answer any of the questions. It was impossible. It was set up that way. So they're
That's
groaning,
great.
looking around, groaning, and what's going on? All this involuntary reactions, right? This is in the book. So this is what nerdy professors do in their off time. So what we did is, so we came in, I came in with the real test. And I said, "Doctor, whatever I'll name his name." And I said, "Hey, I think you gave them the wrong test. Here's the real exam." And I mean, havoc broke out. People were throwing things up in the air. So the temperaments came out. So the inverted people, they just put their head down on the table and said, and moaned. Ugh. The extroverted people, in fact, one was student body president. He got on top of the table and he said, "Welch, I'm going to get you for this." And what it showed is, involuntary. We had a great time. It was just so much fun. But
That's
the
great.
experience was their involuntary reactions came out. So, and we gave them, they got an A on the exam. So, I think they liked us afterwards anyway, because it was an experiment.
That's fantastic. I love it. So what I was going to ask you about was that you said predictability and parenting, it's the best type of parenting. But does that also translate to the husband-wife relationship? Is predictability the best type of spousal relationship also?
Yes. So, for example, I'll give an example. Most couples, one person is late to events, the other is early or on time. I happen to be the one that's late, and my wife is always on time. So, I've had to work on that much more to try to be more on time. And that's that step of faith toward the couple. So, they build a predictability that works for them. But notice that opposites attract, and then they can attack after marriage. And there's lots of
Yeah.
opposites that is not predictable. Like one person says, "Hey, I'm just going to talk to whomever I want after church." The other's ready to go. Well, that's not predictability. That the couple has to take a step of faith toward each other in the sense of, "Let's talk this through. Hey, could we just talk to two people after church?" Well, yes, I'd like to talk to two, but why don't you talk to them as well? And you work on being predictable with each other. Because that creates the most safe place there is on the planet.
That reduces anxiety, and with a reduction in anxiety, it reduces reactivity.
Absolutely. It does.
Okay.
Because remember in the DSM-5, I may have mentioned this, I remember saying it earlier, is that anxiety is anticipatory in nature. So the more predictability we have, the less anxiety is in the home. That's why even predictability of going to bed at the same time and getting up at the same time. Now, keep in mind that because of opposites attract, that is a feat to be accomplished because most couples, one is a night owl and the other one likes to get up early, right? I mean, that's pretty common, not all. And so
God has a clear sense of humor here.
he does. And I believe, Evan, I believe this is where we can really put Bible into motion. And that is taking that step of faith toward the other person where you actually learn to appreciate. Can I give one other example? Or do I have?
Give 10 more.
Yeah, 10 more. Robin and I were just married. This truly happened to us. and we were just married, and this really ages me because we had to write out our check for tithe. That was the only way to give it to the church. So this ages me like 50 years or whatever, but not really 50, but is that I looked at her and I said, "Hey, this is our first time together, and did you remember to write the check?" And she goes, "I'm not sure I knew I was the one that was supposed to write the check, but I've got the checkbook here and I'll write it." And I said, "Okay, great." So she pulled out the checkbook. Now, keep in mind, my wife is methodical. She carefully does things. I do things quickly and I'm not as careful. That's an opposite, right? So she started to write the check and she writes methodically and you can really read her signature. She's writing, and I'm looking back and I'm seeing the ushers coming and I'm getting anxious. Now I have an involuntary reaction. I've got to get that money in the, into the church. And so
If it goes by, you've lost your blessing.
I might have lost my blessing. That's right. Listening. That's the problem. So she's writing and I'm noticing I have an involuntary reaction. And my reaction was, she's slow. I didn't say it. Thank the Lord I did not. But I thought my involuntary reaction was disrespect. And that was, she's slow, because I would have written it. It's done. Pull it out. Here it is, usher. And I realized in that first church service with my bride that if I didn't manage that well, that reactivity would grow and I would not be responsive to my wife. So I learned that she's methodical. Now, what can happen is we can say a lot of things negative about our spouse or even someone we're dating, perhaps, with our reactivity because of our expectations, the expectation we have. I expected her to do it really quickly, like I do. I want to influence her to be like me, right? This is all wrong. It's wrong to do that. And so I learned that I'm going to make sure that I respect her as much as possible because I'm going to already have a reaction because I think she should do things the way I do it. How many men out there, you've been working on, say, a door. I'm the worst at this because I'm like a weekend warrior and I try to fix something in the house and then I have to pay someone on Monday to come and fix what I just did. I do some things okay, but how many of you have been doing that as men and you're working on it and your wife comes up and wants to talk with you about something fun because she thinks this will be a good time we have, and he's trying to focus on that. This is the difference between men and women's brains. And he gets really frustrated because, please, I cannot do two things at once. And I still remember walking into the house. We had a little dog, and Robin was at the kitchen, and she had our Savannah in her arms. It's back when there's a big phone, big phone here. She's talking to someone. She's washing something in the sink, and she's got her foot gently on top of our little dog, petting the dog. And I stopped and I said to myself, how does she do that? I can only do one thing at a time. But women can multitask better. Actually, we got to be careful with multitasking because the brain goes into a little spasm, but not as much for a female because she can go between the two hemispheres rapidly. I don't think that had anything to do with the last question.
That was great. It doesn't matter. Dr. Welch, I we're about out of time here, so this is such a huge blessing to have you as a guest and to be able to share your wisdom with this brief amount of time. For those of you listening, The Responsive Marriage is the book. You can get this on Amazon. You can get it, anywhere books are sold. And I highly recommend it. Incredibly useful tool to help your marriage become less reactive, less anxious, more peaceful, and more intimate, ultimately more intimate closeness. Also, the Responsive Marriage Conference is coming up May 17th and 18th. You can find out more about that at WelchTherapyInstitute.com. Welch is Welch, TherapyInstitute.com. And I hope that you're able to make it out there and spread the word, because we all have people in our lives whose marriages go through these ups and downs, and we have friends or neighbors or whoever that they might be going through a tough time, and this might be just the thing they need to be able to be encouraged and to find some inspiration and hope. And when they're going, "What in the world do I do?" This is a path, a guide path, to show, hey, this is what you do, and this is going to move your relationship in the right direction. And Dr. Welch, I again just want to thank you, because Being in your marriage class was a huge blessing to me and to my wife, helped me. I learned a bunch of things that I really was like, bam, that's what I need to change right there. You said it. I see it now, and clarified things for me and helped our marriage improve. So thank you very much for all your hard work and your dedication to couples.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. What a privilege to be with you. I so appreciate what you've contributed to our family as well. So thank you and God bless.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here this evening, folks. I hope you really enjoyed the program. Share it with some friends. It'll be up on YouTube and podcast. You can pass it along to your friends and just to encourage them. And we'll be back again next week. We've got some incredible guests lined up. We've had some amazing shows recently that you can check out on my website, educateforlife.org. There's also a bunch of curriculum on there that'll help you develop your kids to have a confident Christian faith and grow in their walk with the Lord as you find that useful. So God bless you, and I look forward to being with you next time. Have a wonderful evening.